What we're doing at Oculus is trying to create the world's best virtual reality headset designed very specifically for gaming.
And welcome back to Radio DMG. I am your host, Philip Wesley, the Mile High Mouth. And today is March 31st, 2014, and you are listening to a brand new episode of Radio DMG. Well, we're going to go ahead and do a little bit of a different format here on Radio DMG, starting with this episode. We will still do interview ones, and we'll do musical rations and other programs. But what we're going to do is we're going to just be, well, kind of a general radio show in a way. I've got a couple news stories around here that I'll talk about. I'll talk about a little bit what I've been doing, and we're just going to spend some time with each other. Okay? It's between you and I. Oop. I just realized I probably should have muted that. There's a couple things I should have muted before I went into this. But let's not worry about that. That's actually in the background, that was Fez, which is something I've been playing on the Vita and on the PS3 because of the whole cross-save thing. But I'll get into that in a little bit. First things first, I'd like to apologize for there being a slight delay. Normally, this would have gone up on Wednesday, but it really didn't. So, let's talk a little bit about what we're doing today. We'll probably get you a musical rations for Wednesday, because, hey, kinda owe you one. So, I've got a couple stories here about the news, and I'll get into those in a little bit. I've got a lot to talk about, actually, and some of it I couldn't talk about because, well, some of it was movies, and there are review embargoes on those. I saw Divergent, Sabotage, Bad Words, Grand Budapest Hotel, etc., etc. The one I had to worry about was, well, Sabotage had a embargo, and I couldn't really talk about it. And, I'll get into that in a little bit. First things, let's talk a little bit about what's the news. Well, tomorrow's April 1st. April O'Neil first. Yep. Anyways, it's April 1st, and of course there will be the general April Fool's pranks and stuff that websites put together. Some of them already put theirs up, and it's just every year that's so stupid, you know? I look at that and I go, ugh, this is so dumb. So very, very dumb, but it's apparently a tradition with a lot of websites and such. Yeah. Some of them are meh. Like things like, well, Nestor and Super Smash Brothers, or the Virtual Boy revival or whatnot. Eh. I have to say, though, thank God for water, right? My throat's been all like, blah, to me as of a couple days. And I've been like, oh my God, this is horrible, horrible. Just kind of, not really sure what it was, but I was trying to sit down and, do some recording, and then my throat's all like, I'm just going to be bad to you. So I'm drinking some water with some lemon and things, so, if you hear a little bit of that in the background, that's what's happening. So, just deal with it. What have we been up to? Well, yeah, tomorrow is April 1st, and of course, people are going to be like, oh, look at all these fake stories, blah, 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 and they're not going to be good. We used to do fake stories. on DMGIce.com, and then whenever we went out of our way to make fake stories, they happened. Which is kind of cool, actually. We had 1 year, I think it was, Pokemon Yellow was going to have Game Boy Color hooks, and that was why it was delayed. That happened. Legend of Zelda 1 and 2 being ported over to the Game Boy with Super Game Boy capability, and that actually formed the basis of Oracle of Ages and Oracle of Seasons. And then we had Final Fantasy VI being ported to the Game Boy Advance. Lunar, Silver Star Story Complete being ported to the Game Boy Advance. I was thinking of doing something like Card Hero announced for the United States on the 3DS. But I was looking at some stuff and I realized, wait, that's actually going to happen. Well, we'll see at E3 if they decide to or not, because there is a Card Hero game coming out and they're actually talking about localizing Tomodachi Collection. Of course, they're not going to call it Tomodachi Collection. It's going to have another name in the United States, kind of like what they do with like Style Savvy and a couple of these other ones, or like, you know, Rusty's Big Deal Baseball or whatnot. Anyways, Real Deal Baseball. That's something that's going to happen. E3 is going to be very interesting this year. GDC just ended, and that was interesting this year. There's a bit of backlash over stuff where people are like, oh, monetization. Oh, no. They're going to talk about free-to-play. Oh, no. It's so awful. You know what? The mobile market, it's a mess. Life under the... whatever. Let's get back to where we were. Let's talk a little bit about what Google is doing for April Fool's Day, because this one's actually fun. They're doing a Pokemon Catching AR game. Google Maps Pokemon Challenge. Depending where you are, you can catch various Pokemon using Google Maps and augmented reality apps. Weird. I haven't messed around with it yet, but I'm going to it a little bit later. So I just saw that and was like, oh, that's cool. That was something interesting, I guess, in the news. The other news would be that there is a GameStop exclusive Pink and White 2DS that will be available on April 11th, 2014. And that comes with a Disney Magical World related 2DS case if you buy that at GameStop, where it's exclusive to GameStop. I actually happen to like the 2DS. I think it's got a great form factor. People are like, oh, it's so ugly. It's so big. Blah, 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 blah. You're stupid. Stop it. Stop it. The thing is smaller than a normal Game Boy. We've had much larger portables for much longer, and the system itself is about as portable as, say, a small Kindle. It's lighter than the iPad Air, and yeah, it may not be the best-looking thing in comparison to, let's think of a similar product. Actually, there isn't really a similar product to it. It's pretty nice looking, I think, and the white and pink one means that, hey, Nintendo is somewhat dedicated to this. Once the 2DS comes out in Japan, which it still hasn't, we'll probably see like Monster Hunter 4G versions of the 2DS come out. You'll see CirclePad Pro for it and some other stuff, because the 2DS form factor actually lends itself better to, say, having a CirclePad Pro attached to it, or a second CirclePad and two more back buttons. So I don't know. I think that's kind of neat. For people who are more about 3DS XL, the white and gold Disney Magical World Special Edition 3DS XL will be available in the United States at Walmart and Nintendo World stores starting, I think, at April 11th, 2014. That's because, you know, Disney Magical World, which is essentially Harvest Moon meets Disney World, is expected to sell well. Considering how well Disney Infinity did, I think these are the right baskets to put those particular eggs. And speaking of eggs, it's just in time for Easter. So putting a 2DS inside an Easter basket for your kids might be a great idea. So parents, the one or two of you that may listen to this, go for it. Let's see. There's some other items, like, for example, Square Enix president Yosuke Matsuda recently stated in an interview with Nikkei Trendy that he was surprised by the success of Bravely Default and feels that Square Enix should focus on JRPGs and core gamers. Quote, core gamers, end quote. Well, Square Enix has had some success with mobile markets. I think it is a good idea for them to do this because, quite frankly, Bravely Default was pretty good. I know some people were upset about the last half of it because I guess they didn't watch Steins Gate or The Endless Eight. But you can get through that whole section there, that whole, oh, it's too repetitive section, in under an hour if you skip the side quests. If you're me, you don't skip the side quest because side quests on that are actually pretty grand, I thought, because I really like additional boss battles. I like challenge in my games. Gasp. So, yeah, that happened. But yeah, they're pretty happy about how well it's doing overseas, which means that, well, next year we'll get Bravely Second, and I'm looking forward to it. Next year with Monster Hunter 4 and Bravely Second. It's actually Monster Hunter 4 Ultimate and Bravely Second are what we're getting next year. Probably, I'm thinking a January or February release for Monster Hunter 4 Ultimate, and probably March for Bravely Second, depending on when it releases in Japan. We're still getting Persona Q this year, so yeah, I'm going to be pretty happy with that. We're also supposed to be getting Senran Kagura 2 for the 3DS, as well as Senran Kagura something or other, the one that's for the Vita. We're not getting the cooking game one here this year, according to Access. Yeah, it's Access that has that one. It's either Access or Xseed. One of those. Anyways, we're not getting that one yet so far. Maybe we'll see at E3. But yeah, Square's been doing well with Bravely Default, and they're doing well with their mobile markets. A company that isn't, though, would be Capcom. They actually reduced their fiscal earnings outlook by 50%. They kind of expect to take half of what they were expecting this quarter in profits. And they're citing the reason being that, they've spent so much on mobile markets and it has not had a good return. And Monster Hunter Frontier whatever isn't doing so well. They did state that kind of Monster Hunter 4 pretty much saved Capcom's butt this quarter. And it's really, really obvious. Guys, I know stuff like Line or Puzzles and Dragons and such does well on mobiles, but it does well in a limited sphere. Okay. Anyways, it does so in a limited capacity. What you have to understand is that the mobile market is a red ocean, essentially. You have to either be notoriously bad, Flappy Bird, or notoriously, there's really no set reason for something to hit big on a mobile market. There is no such thing as a sure bet on the mobile market at this point in time. You can load something up with microtransactions and you might not even make back the development cycles or costs for that. And Capcom learned that the hard way. Well, that's what happens when you spend, 70-80% of their actual budget on developing for mobile platforms? Ugh. Oh well. Capcom USA, though, is still focusing a little bit on, their community and handhelds. Speaking of which, they have a poll going on the Capcom USA Capcom Unity forum and website, where they're talking about the virtual console releases of Mega Man 2, 3, 4, 5, and Mega Man Extreme 1 and 2. Those will start showing up in May in the United States on the 3DS Virtual Console, and there's a poll right now at Capcom Unity to determine the order in which they are released. Currently, Extreme and 5 are neck-to-neck in the voting. That's because those ones are really expensive and hard to find, followed by Extreme 2, Mega Man 2, Mega Man 3, and in last, Mega Man 4. I guess the only one that cares about 4 is Triss. Speaking of which, I've been reading through the Divergent trilogy. Audiobooking through it. I went through Divergent, Insurgent, and now I'm in Allegiant. Allegiant, yeah. And then after that, I'm going to start going through the Maze Runner series because that one looks fun too. And then some more C.S. Lewis. I downloaded A Grief Observed, and I'll be listening through that one. I do a lot of audiobooks because sometimes you just have to, while you're typing and job searching, audiobooks are a way of multitasking. Multitasking. Because why not? What am I going to do with that time? Like, aside from there, I could be listening to something while I'm doing that. We were given multifunctional minds, and if I can keep up my concentration on both items, that's fine. I will do it. But yeah, we were gonna see Divergent a couple weeks back before it debuted in theaters. There was a red carpet event, and they had a couple people who did minor roles in the book, sorry, and in the movie, who were gonna be there at I think it was the AMC Colorado Boulevard. Yeah, I think that was it. Anyways, there was a red carpet event. And it was limited, and unfortunately, we didn't get into that one because that studio has not yet gotten and cleared all my press credentials. Ugh, come on. One thing that gets me though, when I see, sometimes you'll see people who are there at these screenings as press, and they own a WordPress website that they've put together. Oh, sorry, not WordPress, Tumblr. I've seen people with Tumblr websites there. And you look at it and you're like, wow, this is a throwback to the 1990s, like 1995, 1996, in that it's completely black with like blue and white or yellow text, and it's awful. So you got people who, well, I know somebody who are over there, but then you have DMGIce, which DMGIce.com is a business. We are actually a legitimate press organization and business because we have the business license. We file the taxes for those. We have an EIN. We filled out our SS4. We have all of that. We could get resale certificates if we need to for selling items and stuff, but we don't because sales tax is awful when it comes to vectors. Ugh. But yeah, we're actually a legitimate business. We're an actual corporation, unlike Tumblr blogs. But yeah, sometimes it takes a little bit because many of these places want to know what you want to say about the movies before they let you in, which is message control. They want to know if you can hold on to embargoes. And I want to let you know that we do hold on to embargoes. We do hold embargoes and we do honor them. I've signed NDAs before and I've always honored them. And that's what we're going to do. I've got four movies to talk about here. Two of which were under embargo, and one which, well, let's see. When we failed to see Divergent the first time, that was a fun night because then I realized that somewhere along the way, driving into the parking garage, I had run over a 3 or 4 inch nail. It pierced the inner wall of my tire, giving me a flat, and that was wonderfully fun, and that explains why. This episode's name is Nailed It. Because that was irritating. And then a little after that, I had a cracked windshield, so I had essentially like $200, almost $300 worth of car repairs to go through. Ugh. Ugh. Fun, fun, fun. Because instead of replacing just one back tire, you have to get both back tires replaced. But they're under warranty and stuff now, so that's always a good thing. Ugh. It did give me some time, though, to check out the book series for Divergent. And let me tell you a little bit about Divergent. The book series is excellent. I liked The Hunger Games. I like Eragon. I like all these little children's books like Spiderwick Chronicles, The Golden Compass, sorry, His Dark Materials trilogy. No, Golden Compass, The Amber Spyglass, The Subtle Knife. Yeah, I love those. I love C.S. Lewis's work. Like Palandra, Our Hideous Strength, the space trilogy, Out of the Silent Planet. Yeah, gotta love those. And or things like the obvious ones, of course, are like The Lord of the Rings and such. But I also love post-apocalyptic fiction. I love that stuff. I love post-apocalyptic stories like, say, Anthem. I really enjoyed Atlas Shrugged. I really enjoyed The Giver. I thought A Handmaid's Tale was complete and utter hateful crap. But that's just my opinion. I really enjoy stuff like Logan's Run, 1984, A Brave New World, Fahrenheit 451. I love post-apocalyptic stuff, and Divergence is actually a post-apocalyptic take on eugenics. It's about eugenics. It's about a eugenics experiment taking place in the ruins of Chicago. And that's actually pretty cool. A lot of where the characters go in this one, the book references quite a bit of Chicago. So if you've ever been there or been to other spots, they reference everything from like the Bean to different streets and things. All the streets are named. There's a lot to it. They give a lot of that. But yes, that was it was a pretty good book. I rather enjoyed it. And oh, who's a good cat? Soup wants to be on the radio show too. Yes, you do. Anyways, I rather enjoyed the book, and the movie hit a lot of great notes, but the last half of the movie, they changed so drastically from the book to the point where I was at kind of throwing up my arms in rage at points in it. Now, I have no problem with the casting. I have no problem with the special effects. I do have problems with the pacing, and I do have problems with the ending. I mean, they are making the other two books, and that's good, but I had problems with the ending. So, as you can tell, I was just a little bit not happy about that. I mean, just a little. Like, it took me a little bit to reconcile that with myself in the book ending because I really, really love the book. The book is kind of, it takes elements of things like Ender's Game or Brave New World, The Giver, 1984, various eugenics stuff. It takes a little bit from other science fiction. Of course it does. And like that's what science fiction does. Science fiction as a whole is derivative. You'll always have people referencing something else. I mean, you can go back and you can read. I mean, look at the epic tales, like Gilgamesh, for example. The epic tale of Gilgamesh and or like Beowulf and other things like that. You'll always see science fiction or fantasy take from other things. You're not going to have something that's completely original, even though you may think it is. There's always someone somewhere who has had kind of the same idea or something similar or close. And that happens. Divergent doesn't really suffer for that book-wise. The book actually thrives on that. The movie, it's wearing some of its influences on its sleeve. And people were knocking at points for that. I don't think they should. It doesn't have a good Rotten Tomatoes thing, but Rotten Tomatoes is what happens when you get a lot of people who don't know how to criticize movies together and they criticize movies. Most critics don't take into account their audience, and they just, well, they're like, well, these characters here are wearing stuff that looks like it's from The Hunger Games. This must be an entirely derivative work of The Hunger Games. Go back to NeoGAF and 4chan, you dumbass. So anyways, here's what I have to say about Divergent. I really liked it. The soundtrack is great. The settings were great. The casting is excellent. I think the kids, given some of the rewrites, did a really great job with it. I feel that the ending was forced and changed to make it more. They dumbed it down for a movie audience, and I feel that that was doing the movie audience a disservice. I mean, yeah, you're going to leave some stuff out, but the book has a nice little bit of brutality to it. At the end of the first movie, there are injuries and things that never happened. There's characters that are missing. just some stuff was not as intense as it could have been if they'd had done this right. The section with some changes were weird. In the book, there's a part where they're playing a game with paintballs, and they're running around what's left of it's a Fisherman's Wharf, I think is the name of it. It's a pier. It's something or other. There's some weird stuff in the book where, I mean, I've only been to Chicago a few times, but if I were more familiar with it, I would be like, oh yeah, there's the pier where the big Ferris wheel is, and there's a Maker's Mart or something like some. There's some stuff. They just kind of made it a little bit more, I guess, palatable for a general audience by changing some aspects of the ending that just bugged me quite a bit. Although the paintball sequence in the book, they replaced it with like these little pain darts or something in the movie. Weird choice, but I feel the paintball thing was cooler because that was something you could actually do. This one was more like, oh no, we have some futuristic gadgets for no real reason, which aren't really explained in the first movie. Not really explained in the first book either. You have to get to the second, third book before you really figure out what's going on, and I'm fine with that. Overall, I just really thought parts of the ending were just, Don't read the book first. Go watch the movie first if you haven't read the book, then read the book. And you'll be happy you did it in that order. Okay? As for Sabotage is from the people who produced Training Day, and it's not nearly as good. It's Arnold Schwarzenegger trying to prove he's still an action star. It's got some nice little twists and turns, but overall I felt that a lot of the things happening in it you could see from miles away. Some pretty good shootouts and a really good car chase sequence, and some pretty gruesome murders, but overall, it was just a movie that I felt was just eh. And it deserved it too. It kind of got, it just kind of got destroyed in the box office, as it rightfully should be. It just did not do well in the box office. I haven't seen God's Not Dead yet, and I kind of want to because, like, well, I like Kevin Sorbo. And I like that there are movies for Christian audiences. Haven't seen that yet. But I did see Bad Words, and I have to admit that Bad Words is really, really funny. And if you like R-rated kind of raunchy comedies, but you want one with a little bit more edge to it or a little bit more heart and soul to it, I would actually recommend Bad Words. It's funny. Definitely go check that one out. I would actually recommend people Netflix. Go see Divergent. Get some people together who haven't read the book yet or have read the book. Go see Divergent. I recommend you go see Divergent. Sabotage, you can wait for it to be on Redbox or Netflix. It's going to be there very, very shortly, and it'll be worth a rental. It's not worth owning. It's kind of eh. That's pretty much it. If you're like trying to recapture the glory of Training Day, or movies like that, go watch Training Day. Also, Arnold Schwarzenegger, I like how he's trying to be badass in this, but this feels like a vanity project. Sabotage is just kind of a meh film. I'm just saying you should Netflix it or Redbox it. Bad Words, see that as a matinee, or go to one of those places where you get to drink. In the theater? Yeah, go to one of those places where they'll sell you beer while you watch the movie, because you'll like it. Get some friends together, go watch it. Grand Budapest Hotel. I really liked Moonrise Kingdom. I really liked The Fantastic Mr. Fox, Royal Tenenbaums, The Life Aquatic, Grand Darjeeling, something or other. Oh, I forgot that. No, Darjeeling Unlimited, Rushmore, those. I like those movies. They're fun and quirky. This one is a fun and quirky caper movie, and it's more style than substance. I love Wes Anderson's films. They're quirky and funny and amusing, but this is one of those where Yeah, I'll pick it up on Criterion release when it comes out or so, but it's not as good as some of his previous efforts. Now, some people are going to absolutely love this. It really depends on, did you like The Pink Panther or A Shot in the Dark? Not the whatever the new thing with Steve Martin or whatnot, but the old stuff. The old stuff with Peter Sellers. This is a movie that I think Peter Sellers is dead. I haven't done any fact checking on that, but if Peter Sellers is alive, it's been a missed opportunity for him to not be in this movie. If he's dead, I wish he were alive so he could have been in this movie. Because the Grand Budapest Hotel feels like a Pink Panther movie, like A Shot in the Dark and such. So pretty much, I saw Divergent, Sabotage, Bad Words, and the Grand Budapest Hotel, and I would give Divergent a B plus, Sabotage a C minus, Bad Words an A, and the Grand Budapest a B. Those are pretty good, and I'm gonna take a little bit of a break real quick to get some more water, get some more air in my lungs, and get back to a little bit about what I've been playing and stuff. So I'm gonna take a really quick break in the recording for that. This is kind of gonna be a short episode, but it's going to be when we don't have any special events or anything to do. I would have loved to have had some Anime Land Wasabi interviews here, but there were people related to Anime Land Wasabi and their press group that shouldn't be there at all. I think the name of that person starts with like Bo and ends with Dufresne or something like that. Yeah. Seriously? I did actually have a video about that, and I went through the basic ideas of that, but we didn't have anything from Anime Land Wasabi this year because we didn't cover it this year. And the reason we didn't cover it is because, well, when you're a legitimate news organization, sometimes companies and people who are not legitimate news organizations feel the need to be assholes to you. Especially if you give them any kind of power over deciding who covers their convention or not. So, yeah, that's why we didn't cover it. But considering it, I mean, wow, there is still lawsuit stuff happening with Anime Land Wasabi. And there's actually, there, this is not, it's verified, but not completely verified because part of it has to do with a pending issue. There's about $90,000 in funding, which went who knows where when it comes to Anime Land Wasabi, to the point where people are not being paid for, like, people were winning, people who won the costume contest, the cosplay contest, they haven't been paid. There's some people who are being paid. One of the people who is a co-owner and a big investor in this had to pay quite a few people out of his pocket when it came to like some of the guests, some of the some of the other stuff. There's it's a big mess. If Anime Land Wasabi happens next year, we'll probably cover it, depending. There needs to be a bit of a shakeup on the board for that. There are some people attached to it that probably shouldn't have been so close to the money. And that's about all I'm going to say about that. We're going to take a real quick break and we'll be back in a few with a little bit about what I've been playing. Just so you know. This is a little bit more about what's going on. I just had to take a little bit of a break because sometimes if you're talking for hours on straight, It's a thing. So, here is a little bit about what's going on with me and what I've been playing. A little opinions on that. I downloaded and picked up and completed all of Fez. Well, almost. I'm missing two of the little heart pieces. And then I will be done. I have all the artifacts, all the maps, all the cubes, all the anti-cubes. Going into that, I really like Fez. Fez is a puzzle platformer. And the basic idea is to try and get 32 of these cubes. Now, there's cubes and anti-cubes, and all those count toward your final count of cubes. You're just wandering around in a side-scrolling world, solving puzzles and collecting cubes. Once you've collected 32 cubes, you, quote, beat, end quote, the game, and then you're given the ability to look at everything in a first-person perspective, meaning you could be standing out into something, and then you'll press into the, you'll tap twice on the screen on the Vita, or push the left stick in on the PS3, and you'll be able to look around in the area. This allows you to read some of the walls in the game, allowing you to figure out the alphabet that's in it and figure out codes and other stuff in it. Fez is a fun game. It's nonviolent. The basic conceit of Fez is that you're a 2D plane character and you can manipulate 2D space in four dimensions in order to get through levels. Like, let's say, for example, that you've got a... you're moving along and there's an island that's out of reach. Now, if you tilt the world one way, you'll bring that closer into the foreground, meaning it will meld with what you're on. It's kind of like, take a book and put a chess piece on the book. Now, move the book, clockwise or counterclockwise. See where the, the best way to do this is to get a book or a DVD case or whatnot, put a chess piece on it. Now, look at it straight on. Look at the chess piece. Now, move that DVD case counterclockwise or clockwise, either of those, and then look at it again from the side. Now, let's pretend for a moment that you put two chess pieces on that area, on that same case. If this is a DVD case, it'd be a little bit longer. They're far away when it's one way, but when you move it, they're close together. This happens where with Fez. You're just moving this perspective in a clockwise or counterclockwise motion to find or discover new areas. Kind of like there's a standing book. You can see the cover of the book. If you rotate it clockwise or counterclockwise, you can see the spine or you can see the pages. If you move it again from that, you can see the back of it. There might be something on the back of it that you didn't see when you were looking at the front. But all of this takes place in a 2D space. It's difficult to describe, but it's easy and intuitive to understand when you try out the actual game. I feel that Fez is a work of art in the same way that Portal is a work of art, or Myst is a work of art. Quite great. I really, really love the music in it, and the little worlds you go through are quite unique. Some of the puzzles are interesting. Like, for example, the game has a day and night cycle. So in some areas, there will be stuff that shows up only at night. Kind of like in games like, say, Pokemon Gold and Silver. But yeah, once you go through that, like, you'll go into an area with, say, forests and trees during the day, and you will miss something. You'll go back to it later on at night, and there might be an owl that you have to talk to or something. The way the map is set up so that anything that you've completed has a little gold ring around it, which actually works pretty well. The only thing I would change is that I wish on the Vita, at least, you could look at the map and then tap where you want to go. If they ever port it to the Wii U, that would be perfect. The map could always be on the second screen, and you could always have a 2D view on it, or you could do off-screen play or whatnot. But once you've beaten the game and you get the ability to look into the look into everything as in a first person perspective, they could just display that directly on the Wii U gamepad screen. There's a lot of stuff they could do with this. Fez is a pretty cool thing. And I guess I should say there's some kind of controversy with the one of the directors or one of the creators of the game, but I think you would have to be a special kind of stubborn or I don't know. I look at it this way. I like music. I like books. I like science. I like having light bulbs. Thomas Alva Edison was a complete horrible jerk. He was a bad person. But light bulbs and some of his other patents we use all the time. I'm not going to stop using radio waves because Thomas Alva Edison is horrible. In the same way that, like, hey, you know what? IBM funded National Socialism. IBM is responsible for the murder of Jewish people in concentration camps. Go read up on it. IBM was a big supporter of the National Socialist movement. They're awful people. But that doesn't mean I'm going to stop using computers. Just because something in the process of making a product is bad doesn't mean the product itself is bad. And that's one thing that I wish people would separate themselves from. For example, I like popcorn. I love popcorn. Sometimes popcorn has palm oil. Some companies produce palm oil by razing the rainforests to the ground and then rebuilding, like replanting stuff in a certain way, destroying environments, throwing animals out on their butts, and all this other stuff. There are some things which are made with conflict materials. All Apple products are made with slave labor. Yes, those are bad, and that needs to be addressed, but that doesn't mean that the product is bad. Just because somebody is, like, for example, Salvador Dali is a horrible person with really horrible and sick sexual fetishes, but his art is good. You have Leonardo da Vinci, who had all sorts of weird proclivities, and he made some interesting stuff, too. I mean, his artwork is wonderful. Just because somebody may not be a person you agree with or may have bad things about them doesn't mean that what they make is worthless. Ernest Hemingway is a jerk. Ernest Hemingway was a bad person. His stuff, though, interesting. John Steinbeck? Yeah, Steinbeck. Yeah, weird personal life, still a good person. Howard Phillips Lovecraft? H.P. Lovecraft? Xenophobic? Racist? Kind of not a good or happy person. His stuff? Excellent. I mean, Call of Cthulhu shaped horror fantasy as we see it today. Just because somebody is a bad person in their personal life doesn't mean that their art needs to suffer for it. Doesn't mean that you reject somebody's art because they're not a good person. You need to separate the artist from the art. Now, let's see, what other stuff? Well, I have been playing, I finished up the 3DS demo for Conception 2, something Star Children, whatever, weird little game, kind of fun, should be interesting. The Vita version, or rather, has a demo that's longer, and much more in-depth, and has much more to it. Overall, there's kind of minimal difference in graphics between the two. I mean, some stuff is going to look a little bit more compressed on the 3DS because of space issues and because the 3DS, frankly, is not as powerful as the Vita. So stuff on the Vita is going to look better. It's the same game, though. And that one looks interesting. I'll think about it more after I finish the Vita demo, which has been a bit longer. Also, I've been watching through, I watched all four theatrically released Ninja Turtles movies, and I need to sit down and watch Turtles Forever. Woo! And the reason I'm doing that is because of the Michael Bay produced, Jonathan Liebsman directed film, I'm going to take a wait and see approach on that. I know people are just like, oh, so bad, so bad, so bad. Oh, it's awful. They're ruining the Ninja Turtles, blah, blah, blah. Let me break something down for you. The Ninja Turtles, I don't have nostalgia goggles for the Ninja Turtles. I did read the comics. I did like the Archie comics, and I have read the original Peter Laird comics and such. And I think that the original comics are interesting, kind of dark. And okay, they're okay. Nice little independent comic. I think the Archie Comics versions are pretty great. I love a lot of the characters in there. I love the storylines. A lot of cool stuff, although the Ninja Turtles fan base always reminded me of the Sonic the Hedgehog fan base, in that they're never happy about anything. They're really, 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 really bad about responding to change. Oh no, something's been changed. Ah! And to some extent, I agree with them. In the original comic, Splinter is dead. And they're out there to get rid of Shredder because, you know, Shredder killed Yoshi and, you know, well, Splinter. So, I think Splinter told them that Yoshi was dead. He didn't tell them that he was Yoshi. Ah. Some weird stuff with that. It's been a while. I'll have to go track those down and read them again. But I watched through the 4 movies, and I have to say that the 2007 version is my favorite out of those because it keeps more in tune with the original comics. And it keeps, sorry, not the original comics, the original Archie comics, and it keeps more in tune with the TV series that was on at the time, which was pretty good. People complained about the way the turtles look, and they're complaining about the way the turtles look in this new one. But let me tell you something about Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. It's cheesy. The original cartoon is bad. It's a bad cartoon. It's a bad cartoon. It has tons of horribly dated references. The writing is awful. A lot of it is very cringeworthy. You've got a lot of nonviolent censorship going on in it. I mean, let's look at the first 3 movies. The first 3 live-action movies. The first one, everyone's like, oh, it's so dark. There's no stakes. The characters have no drive. Shredder's plan makes no sense. These turtles carry around weapons that they never really use on anybody. The Foot Soldiers, rather the Foot Clan, is punk kids that he hired instead of robots or otherworldly aliens, ninjas, or whatnot, and it's just kind of like, eh. It was more or less that, hey, they made a Turtles movie, made it really cheap, and it was popular. They got the origin story wrong in it, and there were all sorts of problems with it, and there's a lot of really, really dated movie references in it. That happens for all 3 of the live-action films. The 3rd one, the special effects were really terrible. The story pacing was kind of a mess. It felt overly long, and it was just meh. The one in 2007, much better. You had better fights. You had much more of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles doing what they should be doing, which is fighting. You're not supposed to think too much about the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. They're superheroes who happen to be turtles, and that's the joke. They make pop culture references from time to time, and they beat things up. They beat up aliens, they beat up robots, they beat up giant monsters and other mutants. That's the thing, that's the joke, that's the gist of it. That is what Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles is. And the new one shows them beating things up, and I will be really disappointed if at no point they have to have some lines in there. At some point, one of them has to say, I love being a turtle, or I really enjoy being a turtle. You have to have cowabunga in there some way, at some time, somehow. And Shredder has to be awesome. The Shredder costume they showed off for the new movie that's coming out this year makes him look kind of Predator-ish, but it also makes him look threatening and menacing. The Shredder they had in the first 2 movies, except for the little cameo with Super Shredder at the end of the 2nd movie, is awful. He's just a guy running around in a sweatsuit. And it's just, not very menacing. Toka and Razor were like rejected Power Ranger villains.
looking through all three of the live action and then the fourth movie, I'm actually, the fans are not going to like the 2014 movie. I'm going to give it a chance because we'll see what they do. Now, it can't be worse than, say, what was it, Raphael running around going, "Damn! Damn! 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 I hope we got a PG rating from that." Yeah, that was just... It can't possibly be worse than, "I'm Super Shredder, I'm under the rafting area here, I'm under this harbor, and I'm just going to bring it down on me in an attempt to kill you guys, even though we're right next to a river and you guys can swim. I'm going to kill myself with this entire, by bringing this harbor down on me, by just wildly thrashing around and looking awesome, but just thrashing around and doing absolutely nothing." The fight sequences were just kind of meh. We had this really awkward thing with Vanilla Ice in the second movie. I mean, at least they're hitting people with swords. Well, hitting swords with swords on horses in the third movie. Looking at the fourth movie, though, 2007's Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, that's the one I like. That is the one I want to see more of. I really like the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles having witty banter, and they give stuff, give minor characters like April O'Neil and Casey Jones stuff to do. I like that. I like the humor there. I like that when they're just chewing up scenery and big old fight sequences. That's awesome. And I hope that the 2014 one, which it looks like it might be delayed from August to maybe November, is what the rumor is. I hope that that follows more of the 2007 formula, where it's awesome. I just hope that they don't put in a lot of Matrix-y special effects. I think the Matrix kind of... The Matrix and Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon are responsible for redefining fight sequences, but also for ruining them. Some of the fight sequences in current movies, like for example, okay, the shootout sequences in Sabotage are a mess. You can hardly see what's happening in a lot of this. And it's just, doesn't make much sense. Because special effects laden battles, they need to bring the camera a little further out so you can see the blows hand happening and such. Which also, actually, that brings me to something I had a problem with in Divergent, where the whole sequence near the end was supposed to have taken place at night. It was supposed to be brooding and such, but it takes place during the day. Well, I've been rambling a bit about that. I do also want to say something about the other hot topic on the internet, which is that Oculus Rift, makers of things that you strap to your face, was bought by Facebook for $400 million cash and $23.1 million in Facebook shares, with an option to trigger in an additional $300 million cash. Those Facebook shares are worth probably about $1.6 billion, so the partnership's worth about $2 billion. Oculus Rift makes VR technology. You put that on your face, and when you move your head or whatnot, it tracks how you're moving and adjusts the screen or what you're seeing actually in 3D, similar to the Virtual Boy, where you have two different screens focusing in on you. It does that in real time. Now, why would Facebook buy that? Well, I think they were saying that they kind of want to use this with mobile markets. And in a way, I understand what they're doing. I think that the future of Facebook isn't going to be just a visual medium that you look at. It's going to be a visual medium that you can interact with. In other words, at the end of the day, I can take photos or other things from my cell phone or from my computer, and then using a series of gestures, I can have this thing on my face and have like a virtual representation of my Facebook. hold on. And now I'm out of water. It means I'm also running out of time on this episode. I've been talking for about an hour or so. So anyways, let's get back down to business on what I think they're going to do with that. I think the future of virtual reality is going to be custom-built, think like housing environments. You put on your VR goggles, or rather you put on your Oculus Rift, or whatever they want to call it in the future. Wait, I know what. We're going to call it, okay, let's see, we have smart homes with Nest, we have, and Google bought them. Let's think, what should we call the virtual reality component of Facebook and social media in the future? We're not going to just call it the Oculus Rift. We're going to call it a paradigm. I'm going to call it your paradigm shift, or your paradigm device. Oh, let's go. Okay, I've got my paradigm device on. Okay, you put on your device, and what it does is it uses GPS data, it uses your data from, like, say, things like Google Maps or whatnot. It uses a lot of combined data to create a simulacrum environment, a simulated environment inside of this VR spectrum. In other words, think like a room. I put this on, I log in to my account on this type of room. Now, in this room, I can have things on my walls. I can have, say, I can have a version of my Facebook wall that just shows up on one of the walls in my room. I can go and sit down at, say, a virtual couch inside this room, and I can organize what's happening on my Twitter feed on one of my walls, on my Facebook feed on my main wall here, and I can organize my photos and other Facebook things into something in the room. Like, for example, I could use the motion controller or whatnot to be staring at a table inside of my virtual room, and on that table will be a book. I pick up that book, and I can go through the photos and things that my friends have posted that day. I can like stuff or post stuff just by naturally just sitting there with this thing on my face, looking around at my room, and then using my hands, kind of like what you can do with the Kinect, to interact with stuff that I see in my Facebook area. Now, the reason you would want to do this is because this allows you to go into that room and mess with stuff there. Like, let's say you're working on, say, your resume in there. You'll be typing on a virtual keyboard in this VR environment, and then sending that physically to other sections of your wall or your room. And then you could also use your room as a launching point for other things. In short, let's pretend for a moment that we're doing teleconferencing. Let's say this is how life will be in the paradigm. The paradigm is what I've decided to call the Oculus Rift device that hooks up with Facebook and all your social medias. You wake up in the morning. Well, time to go to work at the paradigm. I'm sitting down at my computer. I log into my computer on there, and then I put on my paradigm visor. I put on the visor, I put on the Rift, and give it a little bit. It just adjusts to my eyes, and now I'm in my same room, but in a virtual environment. Now, in this virtual environment, I can type, let's say I've got a meeting at 7 with some executives out in Japan. They put this on themselves, and now we're in the same room, essentially. They have an avatar or that version of them that's you can see inside this space, and you'll be talking to that. In other words, It's like video conferencing, but inside of a virtual environment, meaning that, oh, let me show you this file from my side here. I'm going to go ahead, bring up my virtual display in my area, and then I'm going to throw it onto, say, the wall. Just kind of a fluid manner of throwing it onto the wall. We've got, essentially, a VR environment where you can do and generate items. Think of it like the fear landscapes in Divergent, except like a person who's Divergent, you have control over what's going on in there. You can generate items from there. So I'll go into my virtual environment, into my paradigm, and I will generate my TCP reports, or I will show off different bar graphs, or, okay, here's what we're doing in our, this is my proposal over here. I can bring up models of that. Now, this is going to be great for gaming, but it's also going to be great for talking to people. Because let's say, for example, let's say we get to a point where much of what you have in there you can control with thought. Now, we can already control some rudimentary functions in a virtual space with a minimum of action. I mean, we've got, we have Stephen Hawking who talks to other people via an electronic voice thing where he uses his facial muscles to communicate. He's paralyzed because of a debilitating disease, but he's still able to communicate. In a paradigm world, we would put this on him, and he would be able to communicate and move in that. Anyone who's ever lost a limb has heard something about phantom pain. Phantom pain is something where you feel like you have an arm or a leg, but you don't have it. It's kind of like how your foot goes to sleep, and you can just feel your foot, and it hurts. You get that tingling sensation because you really can't move it very well, but you know it's there. You're very aware of your limbs. Now, once we've got that over to Oculus Rift, over to this paradigm, we're going to be able to create new lives and new working relationships with people who wouldn't be able to. It'll be okay. If you're paralyzed from the waist down, you'll still be able to run in this virtual environment. There are people who are going to work specifically in here. You'll have monetization, you'll have algorithms to go through. We're going to have digital currency in it. I mean, as much as people make fun of Bitcoin or Doge currency or whatnot, the future of currency is digital. We are going to end up paying for things with algorithms. Those are going to be the most powerful items. It's going to be what we can create, what we can 3D print, or what we can imagine and do with that that's going to be important in the future. I believe that once we hit this paradigm, everything is going to go in a new direction. It's going to be where there are people who are going to be making money off of performing in here. I think that the virtual sex trade is going to be one of the biggest items in the paradigm. I know that's going to be bad for some people, but it's going to be good for others. Think about the paradigm in regards to what it can do to free people from, say, physical fears, physical disabilities. We can all be closer, maybe just a little the same, in the paradigm. I love talking about future stuff, but we're already over an hour, and I don't want to really bore you with that, so I'm going to go ahead and wrap this up for today, and we'll be back here on Wednesday with another episode of Radio DMG, more rambling from me. Maybe we'll have some interviews coming up with other stuff, because I can arrange interviews outside of conventions, so, you know, we might have some of that. And then we'll also have more talks about other things. I do believe in the paradigm. I do believe that Oculus Rift will be the paradigm. The Project Morpheus from Sony, I see how we're going to use this for gaming, but I really want to use it for telecommuting. I really want to use it for communication. I think that we're getting close. We're getting close. It's going to be way expensive at first, but we're getting closer and closer to you never have to leave your house to be or to visit the world. Think about that. We're going to become much more than we're physically able to. And that is going to be a wonderful paradigm. I think that's going to be the future, where we are more than we were born to be. And I guess that might be a little creepy to some people, but I like it. And I'm looking forward to discussing more of it at some other point in time. But for right now, this has been a kind of a rambling show, and I want to thank you for putting up with it. So, see you later, and good night. You are now caught up. Yeah, Nick, hey, here it is.